I'm Ed Nassar, and you're listening to FU Music.
This is a dill pickle, a mighty pretty pickle, especially when he joins you at the show.
Hello and welcome to Face the Music. It's me, Ed the Sock. Joining me, of course, are my sidekicks. Well, they're not really sidekicks, because I don't want to think of either of them in little green shorts and little elf booties.
I'm picturing you in little green shorts right now.
Ben, this isn't the first time you've done that. I've got, of course, you heard the voice of Ben Rayner, noted, celebrated, critically acclaimed music journalist and critic. Thank you for joining us, Ben.
My pleasure, sir.
And Eric Alper, a music publicist par excellence, music commentator, music journalist. Just put music in front of any word, and you pretty much got Eric. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
I can think of a few nasty words after that name, but we'll just figure it out.
I wouldn't put chef in there. I don't know what a music chef would be.
I can think of a few words beginning with mother.
Mother lover, awesome. I love my mother.
Oh, that's nice. You think of him as nurturing.
Very good to his mother.
Yeah, you think of Eric as nurturing. Obviously, that's what you mean, right?
Yes.
All right. So today, our topic is, because we spoke in the first episode about the fact that there really is no shared common experience because broadcasting has pretty much ceased to exist, especially for music. Very few people listen to music on the radio anymore. And so where do people, usually you would find music on the radio. And one of the reasons you can't find new good music on the radio, all you find is, the corporate heavily marketed crap, is because in the old days, radio program directors had some latitude to play stuff that they had discovered. Now it's all programming on radio stations is done by a guy named Al. Algorithm.
A computer named Al, A.L.
Or AI.
Yeah.
That's the DJ Matic 3000. On The Simpsons, was it? Don't praise the machine.
It's all machines programming what people listen to, and it's all commerce. It's no artistry. I mean, if you get any stuff on the radio now that is at all artistry in music, you're lucky. But a broken clock is right twice a day. So now that there's no shared experiences where people can all discover music at the same time, enjoy music at the same time, everybody is self-curating. Where do you find good music, and how do you find good music? Because there's so much stuff out there, but sometimes when there's so much stuff, it means you actually access nothing because of choice paralysis, and there's just too much to choose from. And where do you look? It's very difficult. People don't tend to curate music online very often. It tends to be people curating themselves.
It's funny you say that, because I look, sometimes I'm looking at Spotify or whatever, and I'm like, hey, your Friday, the new release radar, or whatever it's called, and it gives you a bunch of, and sometimes I'm just like, you know what, I don't need to listen to all that. Like, it's my job, or it was currently not quite altogether my job, to listen to music all the time, but I'm like, wow, there's like 48 titles here. I'm never going to listen to all these. It got that way once you didn't have to physically mail a CD or a tape, or to music journalists. Like I just, my inbox just swelled exponentially, almost impossible, to the point where it was impossible to keep up with then. And now, I don't know, everything's like algorithm towards you. And I do actually feel a little overwhelmed sometimes. And I'm like, fuck it, I'll just play Megadeth. Like it's that kind of the way I got. So I find myself listening on Spotify, which is a universe of new music. It's like Netflix sometimes. I just scroll through Netflix for hours, and I'm like, you know what? I'll just watch a Bob's Burgers. It's a lot to take in, and sometimes I just want to shut it off. But I like the old kind of curated drop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is that it's funny because right now Spotify is uploading, in the coronavirus era, almost 44,000 tracks a day in relation to 22,000 last year. Fridays, it's even worse. It's almost 100,000 new tracks because all these artists are at home, they're creating, and they're uploading. But it's funny when you take a look at the sheer amount of songs, but the media is still concentrating on the three or four artists that everybody else is. For instance, this week, they had the 1975 album. They released the Owen Paulette album. They also released the Carly Rae Jepsen B-side. That's it. That's all seemingly every single blog in the free world seemed to write about So when you're talking about radio, it also depends on if you're talking about the commercial ownership of Bell, Rogers, Shaw, Stingray in Canada, where, yeah, the rock radio station that you hear in Vancouver is going to be exactly what's being played in Toronto or Montreal or Halifax. But I listen to KEXP in Seattle. I listen to The Current in Minneapolis. And they'll play The Best and Prince and The Doors and Haim and the Abbott Brothers. So they play what, to me, is kind of like the best of the really popular stuff that still holds the test of time, but also the really good stuff. Because I still want to have a curator, because sometimes it does get overwhelming with the sheer amount of songs that are out there. But I kind of like to have people like Ben out there telling me really what I should listen to, because I like him and I like The Current and I like KEXP. So I kind of trust their value judgment, because that's their job, is to listen to 100,000 songs a week. Or not, but you know what I mean.
When I was a kid, we had, like, CBC was great for that, because they had Brave New Waves and Nightlines, which was,
absolutely.
I'd miss my half. They called me Sleepy Ben, actually, because I was always late when I first did it, because I'd step to the floor or whatever, listening to Brave New Waves obsessively, because it was just like, it was so good. And it followed a path, and there'd be a profile. And I miss that kind of content on radio. You know what I mean?
But it also depends on where you grew up, too. Like, when I was in the 80s, and I
listened to... True, we didn't have a CFNY in St. George, New Brunswick.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I was listening to that station, and that's how I found out about The Cult, and The Cure, and Depeche Mode, and Talk Talk, and Tears for Fears, and all this stuff, still to this day, that I literally still listen to. But if you were outside of those realms, it's like the version that I hear of Americans growing up. Once MTV came on their cable system, it blew their mind. But like 95% of Americans didn't even have MTV until like sometimes even in the late 80s when the cable systems got better. So it really all depends on where you grow up. But now with the consolidation of radio stations and the way that it is, it seems like even if you're in a small town, you can still pick up the top 40 that radio is playing over and over again.
Well, you're definitely. By the way, you guys know I'm here, right? You know I'm here still? You guys were having a nice conversation.
Oh, yes. Is there a sock in the room?
Yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Sock.
Completely free. I sat back for a while there, because that's what a good host does. I sat back, but my narcissism has stepped forward again, and so I'm talking. Because, yeah, it's like going to a beach and saying, okay, I want you to find one particular grain of sand. That's what trying to find music, and you don't know what the piece of sand necessarily looks like, but you'll know it when you see it. And that, because that's the thing with online music, all that Eric was quoting, how many songs keep getting added just on Spotify. And you think that there's that many people out there making music, and a lot of them, I'm glad they're making music. They're probably doing it because they can't imagine doing anything else besides making music, but they're not going to be making money from making music.
No.
And really, artists should be able to make some money from their music, but a lot of them will never see a penny or a fraction of a penny in royalties. And that's, you know, part of the problem is that, the good name, like the people who are good may be dropping out because they have to earn a living, and it leaves the people who are just doing it because they feel like they have to. Like, if, you know, music is something that they have to create, which doesn't necessarily mean that anything they're doing is any good. By the way, what is that noise in the background? It's driving me crazy.
That is not me.
How's that?
That's better. What was that?
I thought it was maybe you emphatically banging the table in front of you, like, well, shaking the microphone.
I want new music on the radio.
You know, Ben, that I have no...
So, like, he's really letting us have it.
Ben, I have no hands and no arms, so anything I'm... anything I'm thumping with, you don't want to think about.
The cigar hitting the microphone.
No, cigars don't make that kind of thump. You know, and it's difficult because of the fact that there's so much out there, and it's like videos, like YouTube. There's so much there. Most, it used to be, I think the statement was that 95% of everything was crap. Now, thanks to everybody being able to, you know, record their own media, it's closer to 99.9% of everything is crap. And it takes time out of your life to try something, to listen to it. And usually, sometimes a song doesn't hit you the first time. It's the second time, third time that it hits you, that you really get into it and really appreciate it. And nowadays, who even does that? If you don't like the first 15 seconds, they go on to something else.
That's actually, like, the point I was making a mental note to make was that I feel like I don't get into stuff as deep as I did when I had to play the tape or the record or the CD, you know? And I would listen to an album back to front almost religiously. Like, I'm still an album guy very much. But when I'm on, like, my computer at night or whatever, and I have my headphones on, and Spotify, like, I bounce around. And it's true. Sometimes, man, mid-song, hey, you know what? Fuck it, Judas Priest. And it's like, I feel like my... Like, the albums that I really like, I make myself go and buy the record. So I will play it and sink into it. And I find, like, yeah, that kind of, like, YouTube, Apple Music, Spotify culture, it is just kind of dart, dart, dart. And if something hits you right away, you can still go on to the next thing because there's so much. And, like, it takes so long to get back to it. You know what I mean? Like, I usually know when I'm listening to a record the first time, I'll say to my long-suffering partner, I'll be like, oh, I love this. I'll know like three songs and I'm like, I'm going to be obsessed with this. Like, I can feel it. All 10 songs are going to be perfect. I'm going to be obsessed with this one. And I still get that sometimes. But there's so much coming at me. I don't have the time sometimes to even get that far into the record. You know what I mean? Like, it's quantity doesn't necessarily mean quality. You're quite right, Ed. It's just like, just because you can do it doesn't necessarily mean you should, but everybody can. So a lot of people do it when they shouldn't be doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I wish that there was an authority that was set up that could go through all these things and, like, you know, somebody's brain turned into an algorithm that could go and knock the shit off of the internet. And I believe that the correct person to do that would be me.
Well, yeah, probably you could probably do it.
You do it right?
Yeah, by all means, go take that mantle.
No, I don't want to do it. I want to turn my brain waves, my brain patterns, into an algorithm that will go out there and knock shit off of the internet. And it'll do it to video too. It'll substantially reduce the amount of stuff that's out there, but the stuff that's there will not be shit. And how do I know that my taste is the same taste as everybody? I don't. But my taste is what everyone should share.
Me too. And that's where you end up with like 99.6% of all songs on Spotify have less than 100 streams. Because once you get your family and your friends not hating you for like bombarding them with your music, a large part of it, of the music on there, never gets heard more than 100 times, and rightfully so. It just doesn't deserve it, or that they don't have a manager or a booking agent or a record label. You know, back when we were all growing up, there was a triangle. The top 1% would make the money. That's the Madonnas of the world. The middle section were people that were getting by. They might make a couple of bucks here and there. And then the bottom was all of the artists that were touring this country coast to coast on the weekend. They would just be jobbers. But certainly that middle section and the bottom section is so much bigger now. But it's like that with everything, with business, with books, with TV, with movies. Just because everybody's got an iPhone doesn't make them a photographer, but it allows them an entry point. And I think that's kind of good. The problem I have with all of it is that radio is playing songs much longer in terms of keeping them on the playlist, as opposed to the quickness and nothing sticking in the regular world. They're still on, say, some superstar's first single when Spotify already has 5 or 6 songs from that album, well over 200 million streams, and they're just not touching it.
Well, so you wonder why radio's dying, Eric. I mean, radio is, it's the dinosaurs after the comet has hit, and there's already ash in the air, and the dinosaurs are still looking around going, huh, is it nighttime already? I mean, that's basically radio.
I can honestly say I've never really listened. I would listen to things like Brave New Waves, or I'm sure if I had it growing up in Toronto, CFMY would have blown my mind because it seems like it played everything that I grew up finding by myself through like magazines and shit in rural New Brunswick. And because we didn't actually have much music, but our cable system was so shitty in St. George, we only got like 12 channels. Black Harbor would have much music, so I would get VHS tapes from my friends in Black Harbor of like City Limits and stuff. So that was like, you know, I liked that questing, but I never, like, radio always drove me nuts. I like commercial radio. And it's only gotten worse. I was in the very early years, like, why are they playing the same shit all the time? And then it's like, And why is so much of it awful? But the mechanics of it and the kind of scheming behind it and like the business of it now has made everything so completely homogenous. Like, you know, if it's going to be one of those awful modern rock bands, and you know the kind of, I mean, like your post Nickelback kind of grungy guys, or like bands that sound like, the Max Martin diaspora, that kind of thing. Like it's all, if it's pop radio, it's going to sound like a Max Martin tune. If it's yeah. rock radio, it's going to sound like it's Theory of a Dead Man. And it's just like, it's maddening that it fits those pockets so well. Like I'm just, whenever I turn it on, I'm like, God, it's just as bad as I remember it. Oh, and I almost never listen to radio. Like
I'm still sitting here trying to think that there is such a thing as a post Nickelback type band. Like, Nickelback is the North Star that we're navigating with nowadays. Like
this is that's sad.
This is where this is what it's come to. Post Nickelback.
What's the way up from Peterborough? They were the one that I was trying to run down. I can't remember that. I'm not here to run bands down.
Yeah, it's.
Odd though that all those bands have made Nickelback seem like the most harmless. You're like, hey, they're kind of odd. It's like the longer Ben Mulrooney is on TV, I'm like, hey, I don't hate him so much anymore. Like it just, he's worn me down. It's like, he's just there.
Yeah, you
I
know what?
I feel like Nickelback has done that to me.
Ben, you remember Patty Hearst joined her captors eventually.
It's true.
It's called the Stockholm Syndrome, and it's working on you with music and Ben Mulrooney, who as an individual is a nice enough guy.
He is a sweetie. Irritating on TV.
It's because he's the perfect mannequin. And not only that, but they've managed to clone him so that he's hosting like 9 shows on CTV, and the ones he doesn't host, his wife hosts. But that's another story altogether. I just wonder if, because it's, there's not the money in music that there used to be. I remember at Much Music, we would get artists coming in that were really peripheral. And then they would eventually blow up, most of them. But initially they were peripheral, but the record company was still investing time and money in them to bring them in on the hopes that they were gonna catch. Whereas now, because of streaming and people being able to copy songs and so on, and albums don't sell like they used to, with people to put out singles, there's so little money in it compared to the way it used to be, that record companies are focusing all of their resources on fewer and fewer artists and taking no risks because they can't afford to. What do you think, Eric? Am I reading it right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, those million-dollar deals are still out there, but after you've proven yourself that you can do 50, 60, 75 million streams on Spotify on your own, I mean, there's a 15, 16-year-old artist named Ren from Toronto, who put up her music on SoundCloud. Somebody at SoundCloud in the Canadian office loved it, stuck it on the main page, and then she ended up getting a publishing deal and then a full-on record contract through Universal Music Canada. So those kind of deals still happen. What I'm kind of blown away with was that all of these artists that I used to think were making a lot of money from their album didn't. You know, without naming names, I'm still working with artists that are in debt for their record label back in the 1980s or 90s because they never paid back that advance because the expenses were just too high with what they were making. But a lot of these bigger record deals, they have data like you wouldn't believe. They know by the postal code who's listening to what, in what market, and what time. They have plenty of data from playlisting to prove that when this song is number 2 on the playlist, it gets this much as opposed to number 9. So they're not taking the chances, but what they're doing is they're certainly signing a lot more, I think, these days than in the past, because there's more opportunity to break through Spotify cheaper rather than having to send somebody on a worldwide tour and crossing fingers and hope that you break out.
I still find it odd that there's not more of those like Billie Eilish kind of breakout thing. Yeah, I think that's a volume thing, but it's, you know, like, because it's theoretically like this democratic landscape where anything amazing can emerge. It is odd though that it takes like, I don't know what extra momentum like a Billie Eilish gets, and she's fantastic. But
3 years
maybe that's why. But it's like, I'm surprised there aren't more of those who kind of pop out of that world, you know what I mean? Like it does seem that like you still kind of have to, I guess, because, you know, to get that huge like Drake or Taylor Swift level thing, you kind of still need radio. Is that give it the extra oomph? Because then people look it up on Spotify. I feel like there should be more. I feel like there should be more eruptions of just like greatness out of it, and there aren't. But I think it speaks to Ed's point, where there's just so much. Like it's like lightning in a bottle kind of thing. Like you're not everything is going to reach that theoretical audience that it should.
But a lot of those artists that we're actually talking about, except for Billy, they kind of broke. They had like one foot in the traditional radio world, and then one foot in the YouTube, SoundCloud, MySpace even world, or now with social media. But like I get emails from independent artists that I've never heard of before that write me two lines that says, check out my music. And I look at it and they have 100,000 followers on Instagram. They have 3 million streams on Spotify. And I'm thinking, how on earth are you getting this? And it's a completely different world. So I think that there's a lot of artists that are getting those 5 million streams that nobody like in our circle will have ever heard of. But I think Ben's right. Those superstar artists, it only seems like every label can handle 3 of those a year. You know, but well, even with Billie Eilish, like she got signed like 4 years before her breakout year. Lorde was the same way. She signed the deal when she was 12 and her debut album at 16. It's almost like if they're going to gather the worldwide team around them, they better be right because it's just too expensive to fail.
All right. Now, here's the thing. When we're talking about how difficult it is to find good music and the reasons why, but the subject of this show was how to find good music. So we've talked about why you can't. How do you guys go about finding good music? How do you advise somebody who's looking to browse and to discover new artists and to discover new music? How do people find that nowadays? I'll go to you first, Ben.
Well, because I am that increasingly rare bird, a print music journalist, or until recently was, currently unemployed because nobody cares about print music journalism to some extent.
We care.
Yes, I know you do, and I love you for it. I still read a lot, and I mean, it's harder. Like when I was a kid, I'd have a subscription to Spin and Rolling Stone and all the other magazines, the Ray Gun, all those cool. Like there were so many, and like I still like to read what people are saying about music rather than like just blindly hunting and pecking on my keyboard. I do like a little curation, and maybe that's the egotism of my profession, but that was the value, I think, of music journalism, and is the value of music journalism. It's just like when you find those voices that you identify with and trust, or that you completely despise, you go the opposite way. You know, you have that barometer for your taste, and I kind of like my friend Stuart Berman is a fantastic music writer, and if Stuart raves about something on Pitchfork, I will go to it because I trust, you know, and I'll like comb through Metacritic, you know, and just see what they're saying about the new releases and haunt the blogs. Although the blogs are like, you know, there was a boom at one time, and it's not like they're popping off a little bit too, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird spate in the art of criticism because it's kind of a dying art form. But that's still my primary intake. Like I also get sent a lot of records because I've been a music writer for 25 years. You know, like so it's. But even those, I like a little bit of a curator, like be it a publicist I trust or a label I trust sending it to me or musicians I know because it's Canada and it's a small country. So you kind of know everyone after a while, as you both know. I still like to just see what other people are saying. I like to read. I still read. My name is Ben Rayner and I still read.
Now, where do you go to read the stuff though?
Well, like I said, I'll like poke through Metacritic. I will check blogs like Pitchfork. I like to read the guy. Like I love Alexis Petridis of the Guardian. I still have critics I like, right? I'll still comb through what Spin.com is reviewing. Like I like those filters because I trust those filters. I was never a radio guy, so like someone else's playlist doesn't really appeal to me, or like a new music show. like I've always kind of self-curated, and then that's probably why I became a music critic and a part-time DJ, is because you get to thrust things in front of people that you like. And that's always been the way.
You have the time for that now because you're playing Mr. Mom. Yeah, a lot true. Of people don't have, and you also, that was...
It was also my job, though. I have the luxury of making a living from music journalism, you know, for half my adult life. Half my life. My entire adult life. Even probably some of my late adolescent life. And so, I do have that luxury.
You know what, Ben? I've known you a long time. I don't really know that you've ever left your adolescent life.
That's I'm a drinking a beer in the park right now and looking out for cops.
Eric, what about you? Where do you find music? Where do you direct people? How do you know? I mean, you have artists coming to you because you're a publicist par excellence, but where do you otherwise find music? How do you find something amidst all of that shit that's out there? How do you find the peanut?
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of like Ben. I still read Q magazine. I still read Mojo. I still listen to
Q NPR. Is awesome, right?
Yeah, Q is like, you know, I used to get NME every once in a while, but I think that you're right. Like the blogs that we used to trust, or at least find those trusted ones, they're kind of falling off a lot because that generation of people who started a blog, they're probably 10 years in, they're either bored of it or that they can't make money. And the new generation of music curators, they have a Spotify playlist that they're making a couple of $100 a week, way more than doing a Google ad. So for me, you know, I'm kind of the same way. I look at Pitchfork, I look at Spin, I'll look at Rob Sheffield from Rolling Stone just to see what he's writing. I used to always listen to whatever Ben Rayner gave a good review because I trust him that much. But I think for the I think for the general public though, you know, where do they go? I think for the most part, you know, they'll probably just go to their Spotify new release radar and hope that the curating thing is there. But it's everywhere. You can go to SoundCloud's homepage, you can go to, you know, Apple Music and their beach radio shows. Google still has, you know, Google Music for the time being until that shuts down. So I think that, you know, there's always places to go to find out about music. It's just a question of finding the stuff that you like. You know, Metacritic is great because they're just going to combine all of the music critic score into one score, kind of like Rotten Tomatoes. There's still movies that I won't even watch if it has less than a 70% Rotten Tomatoes, because, you know, my time is valuable like everybody else's. I'm not going to go, well, maybe 18 movie critics are wrong. I'm going to go, well, collectively, this movie sucks.
You know what? Sorry, Ben.
Go on.
I have a problem with that in that there's been a lot of great movies that have had bad Rotten Tomatoes reviews because the critics determined they were going to dislike it before it ever came out. I mean, I think of the movies that I saw that I really enjoyed that critics hated, and I think I would have not seen those movies if I listened to what these other assholes had to say. So
I basically only watch horror movies, so I'm used to everybody hating everything I like. I'm just like automatic,
Ben,
you're like
that.
You can kind of tell from the tone of them, like how much they hate it. It's usually like, oh, this is going to be really good, just because it's outraged the critics so much. Something like Midsommar, where everyone's just like, I don't get this. This is indulgent and awful, and it's like, oh, this sounds good. So I'm with Ed.
All right, so I just wonder if there's not music. I mean, people go to watch videos on YouTube, and they'll look first at how many people watched it. And if not a lot of people have watched it, they won't watch it because they assume that it's not good because people didn't watch it, which means that they're not going to watch it, and other people are going to look. And if you can see a number of people who looked at the video and determined they weren't going to watch it because no one else watched it, it would be a much higher number. And it's just...
That's kind of like watching the charts, though, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of the same idea, right? You're looking at the Billboard chart.
No, not really, because when the charts meant something, there was still radio. You would still encounter that music on the radio, and you might, surreptitiously, it'd sneak up on you, and you'd be listening to it and discover it. Whereas on these videos, people won't even press play. And there's a lot of good stuff that just, you know, Gen Xers, we weren't raised with the culture of watching something and commenting on it are part of the same experience. Watching something and commenting are two separate experiences. So if there's stuff out there that appeals to Gen Xers, you're going to see less comments. You're going to see less views because they don't necessarily go and tell all their friends online about it. It's the people who appeal to millennials, for whom that is, you know, the same experience watching and commenting, that spread the stuff around. So there's stuff that's aimed at Gen Xers, which may not get the same currency as stuff that's aimed at younger millennials or Gen Y or Gen Z, because of a difference in culture and expectation as to how and why you react to media. Wow, silence in the room.
That's pretty heavy, actually. Now I'm digesting that. It's an interesting thesis. Go on, Eric. You parse that for a moment.
It makes me want to go jump in the ocean. You know, certainly I think that the culture of a younger generation, it's almost like you find your community first. With regards to music, I think that if you happen to be a lonesome person in the house and you like this music, you can find people who like that music too. And I think a large part of the big change and the big shift is that everything is all about video. They're living on their phones, they're watching their, you know, but it's still, I think good music still has to win out. But obviously, you know, that generation of 8 to 15-year-old music lovers have something different than, you know, they've got different experiences. They know more about their favorite artists than I did even growing up. So I think it's just a completely different experience. But yeah, like 70% of all the music on that's being consumed around the world is through YouTube. So, you know,
that's that always boggles my mind.
Totally, right? Because, like, you can look at it and say, well, you know, there's certainly a lot of videos that have, you know, a lot of stuff, but you go to India, you go to the K-pop world. I mean, they have, you know, tens and tens of hundreds of thousands and millions of views, and they're not even cracking the surface. You know, it's an interesting theory about, like, well, why it doesn't, how come YouTube hasn't been able to dominate, you know, the charts on Billboard as much as they used to? And it's like, they kind of are, because just
it's
the sheer amount of views, what happens? Yeah.
No, it makes sense that YouTube is so widely used, because it's like, it's the easiest shorthand. It's the universal one. It's free, right? Like, if you're sending links to different streaming services or whatever, like, so it's just by default. I think everyone just, for anything now, you're just like, I'll send a YouTube link. You know, like, it doesn't have to be music, movie, like, it just becomes, or just like a clip from The Simpsons or something, but it's just become this. I'll just look. I'm sure it's on YouTube, and I mean, it's kind of cool that it's achieved that level of prominence. But it's I don't know. It's just a different. I mean, you know, maybe we're just old and we don't understand technology. Maybe it's not our world anymore.
We're not old. We're classic.
We're classic. That's right. Vintage.
Oldies, but we're vintage. We're like fine
wine. We just called the segment Two Middle-Aged White Men and a Song.
Well, I think that's kind of the subtext anyways, when people are reading and they see our names.
That's true.
But you know what? Those young whippersnappers have enough of stuff catered towards them. Let there be something that's catering towards, you know, the people that built the world that they get to live in. Though they don't like that. They hate the world they're living in, because we're all at blame. It's funny how it's all this conflict between millennials and boomers, and it's like Generation X doesn't exist. We were known originally as the lost generation before.
Well, we were the lost generation.
Yeah, yeah. Now we're lost.
We seem to be the one that are handling this coronavirus and isolation much better than anybody else, because we were the one that were at home with nobody to talk to for years right after school.
The bull is hot in the house, avoiding a beating.
Yeah,
we're a virus life.
We were all watching Ed the Sock alone.
That's true.
Who is this person?
Well, yeah. We're now the get lost generation.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of ironic that, like, even the younger generation found a way to kick the forgotten generation in the ass. So we're doomed to be a footnote in the history book.
That's right, because boomers matter now, because it's the conflict between boomers and millennials, Gen Y, Gen Z, and they've kicked us by making us completely irrelevant to the conversation.
Someone hit me with an OK Boomer on Twitter a couple weeks ago, and I was like, through the fucking roof. I was like, I am not. I think because I've been doing my job for so long and I started really young, people assume I'm like 60 years old. But it was, I was like, I was gravely insulted. I wanted to find that person and strangle her.
Yeah, and they say, hey, boomer. They do the okay boomer with me. It's like, that falls on deaf ears. I'm not a fucking boomer. But they still do it because it's supposed to be about an attitude that they've determined I have, which is an old person's attitude. You know, so I always respond, okay, zygote.
I like it. I might adopt that.
Yeah, they know what I'm talking about because they're zygotes. Anyway, and they came up with poor education. All right, so I think that you guys have given some good tips on where to find good music. You know where I find good music? I find it in my CD collection, and I just listen to the things I liked. Where I go and find internet sites that stream 80s, 90s, some of the good stuff from the aughts. I'm not interested in discovering new music anymore because I'm happy with the stuff that I know I like. I'm not a young man anymore. I'm not an old man. I'm in that middle spot. But you start to realize how much of your life you have left. I don't have enough life left to spend it combing through music sites to try to find something I might like. Fuck it. If they're not able to get my attention, fuck it. I'll go back and listen to Cyndi Lauper.
Okay, boomer.
Oh, that's right.
I'm going to get you, Alfie.
It's funny though. I was staring at I have a 3-year-old, so like basically if partner and child are gone, that's when I get to smoke a lot of weed and play records aloud. But I was like staring at it. That's why there's still thousands of CDs in the house in addition to all my records. I still have a box of cassettes from when I was a teenager. But I was like, I haven't played a CD in so long. Because now if I like something, I'll go buy the vinyl because I can get the vinyl very easily again. I was like, my poor CD player. I feel bad. I don't, all these amazing albums lining the walls of my living room, and I haven't pulled them out in ages. But I'll look at it sometimes and dial it up on Spotify. I'll be like, hey, I listen to that.
Let me just offer this.
I'm my own worst enemy there.
Let me just offer this. All the people who are laughing that I listen on CDs and Ben has CDs, and I guarantee you Eric has CDs too. When there's an electromagnetic pulse and it knocks out all the stuff that's magnetically based and it knocks out all your computer hardware, I still can put in a CD and play it.
This is what I've always said. That's why vinyl is awesome, because someone could probably figure out how to get a cone and then, you'd be like, this probably was a like even more than CDs, we need laser and all this shit. I'm like a record? Like once we wipe our, the virus kills us all or we blow ourselves up, it's like someone can figure out a record. I'll be like, I think this did something. You know what I mean? I like that idea. It's permanent. I was going to say a friend of mine used to run a record shop. Sadly, it went down when that first collapse of record shop before the current waning resurgence. But he was like, I'll kill 2 gigs off my hard drive of music without a thought, but I'll never throw out a record. You know what I mean? So maybe that's the attitude that we like, but there's a bit of a generational shift where music is a distraction and so abundant that it's almost disposable, that you don't really get as deep into it. Or maybe we just happened to grow up in an era when that was, you grasp onto something by virtue of the technology that presented it to you, you know?
Well, a lot of very thought-provoking things that were said, and a good many of things that provoke no thoughts, and that's exactly the way I like it. I want to thank you guys for, of course, joining me here on Face the Music. Eric Alper is a record publicist, a journalist. Many, many musical attributes can be applied to Eric. Eric, where can people find you?
At that Eric Alper on Twitter and Instagram, and that ericalper.com for the blog and website. Yes,
because there's so many Eric Alpers, we have to that Eric Alper, right. Not the guy, not the lumberjack.
The Eric Alper.
That's right, the Eric Alper. And Ben Rayner, where can people find you?
Right now, I recently left my longtime gig at the Toronto Star.
You mean you jumped off a sinking ship?
Yeah. So I got some stuff brewing. I'm being a dad right now because my partner works at Kids Help Phone and has to train counselors by remote. So the idea of being a working journalist in that environment, and he had a 2-bedroom apartment with a 3-year-old. So I'm basically being a full-time dad until she goes back to daycare. And then I got some stuff happening that I will be able to talk about I hope then. Right now, just find me on Twitter. I hate Ben Rayner, and you will be apprised of my whereabouts. And stuff will pop up. I do freelance stuff, but right now I'm on dad duty, man. I'm totally Mr. Mom. I'm out with my kid all day, and then I go home, make dinner for the ladies, and pass out on the couch.
Well, you know what's cool about being Mr. Mom is Mr. Mom. His next big role was Batman. So you may very well become a vigilante, which would be very, very cool.
I like this. I like your train of thought, Ed.
Thank you. It's completely ridiculous, and that's exactly why we all like it. All right, thank you all, and thank you guys for listening to this FU Music program, our first program, Face the Music. If you'd like to help us along, we're starting a new challenge. We're asking everybody who listens to donate a buck, just a dollar, because we know how many people are listening. If everyone gives just a dollar, either on Patreon, which will be a dollar a month, it's patreon.com/FUNetworkTV, or if you want to give us a little boost on PayPal, do it through our email address, which is FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Just a buck, just a dollar. That's less than you spend on a cup of coffee. You don't even think of it. It's a loony that sits in your pocket, making your pants misshapen, making your pockets misshapen and jingling when you walk. It's a dollar. No, everybody can afford a dollar. If you can't, okay, no problem. You need that buck more than I do. But if you can afford a buck, then please, if everyone just gives a buck, we'll be able to get new production equipment and we'll be able to keep building forward with building the new spiritual successor to Much Music, which I think everybody misses. And there's lots of talent out there that needs that kind of curator, that kind of focus, both as, you know, VJs. There's some good VJ, potential VJ talent out there, and there's good music talent. We've been talking about how stuff isn't curated. We want to create something that does curate it. So a buck, think about it. And that's it. I'm done.
The buck towards the new world order.
That's right. That's right. Another brick in the wall. Actually, the wall's a bad thought. Okay.
Okay, boomer.
And at that, we shall say adieu. You're listening to FU Music.